Welcome to The Scoop, brought to you by Indeed, your weekly dose of internal talent news from here and around the globe. So grab your popcorn and open your mind as I hand you over to our anchors from Tarpod, Lauren Sharp and Craig Watson.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Scoop. I'm Craig.
And I'm Lauren.
Yes, you are. Lauren, you're not too well today, are you?
Oh, no, no. I think
you found you lying on the floor of the office, your feet in the air.
I'm sick. Sick of you.
Is that how it shows?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, hopefully that handful of jelly beans will get you through this news broadcast.
All the way to Bali next week, buddy. All the way to Bali.
You're supposed to get Bali when you're there.
No, I'm just sick, as I said, of you. But anyway, I'm going to kick off today.
Go on, then.
And we're going to talk about AI.
AI. I think we've got a couple of little
We've got a few, actually. So in my readings through the last week,
yes,
I've got come up with a headline here from HRD. How many hours are employees saving due to generative AI?
3.
Is that your guess?
Yeah.
Wow. Nearly 4 in 10 users of generative AI in the workplace are saying they're saving up to 10 hours.
Is that a week?
As a new report revealed, as the widespread use of technology at work. Contentful's survey, which is only a small survey, I'll give it this globally, I found that 37% of daily Gen AI users are saving between 5 to 10 hours a week. Another 38% report saving between almost 5 hours of work time at work thanks to Gen AI tools, according to the report.
Wow.
Now, I had a look at their little graph that they had going on there, and look, the average really, you're sort of around that 5 to 7 hours a week being saved. And that's pretty good. I would save about 4 hours a week by using generative AI tools.
I'm still not using it enough, but I'm putting all that mundane stuff through and repetitive stuff, which I would save a lot of time. And it just, you know, it's great how it's going. I'm loving it.
I'm enjoying it. It is a time saver, and I think this is the thing. It's saving time, and we're spending time in other areas.
Which
I'm enjoying.
But on the other hand, I've got one here from our partner Indeed.
20%
of Australian jobs face a high potential exposure to generative AI, according to Callum Pickering, our mate Callum, senior economist over there at Indeed.
Fangirl on Callum Pickering all the time.
Yeah, he is. He's very clever, and he speaks not like normal economists who are boring. He's not boring.
No, he's lovely.
Not. He's not. Just over a year or so ago, a few Australians had even heard of Gen AI, let alone trying to hire people with expertise in its usage or development. But while job postings relating to Gen AI remain a relatively small part of the market, just 0.8% of Australian job postings mentioned Gen AI in their job descriptions at the end of March, they're increasing rapidly. The share is up by around 50% over the past 3 months. So we have got a link to that report from Callum, but it is showing that there are changes in the job advertising market around Gen AI.
I know, and in the very near future too, I do believe we might be doing a scoop with Callum.
Ooh, are we?
Oh,
scoop
we are.
Scoop diddy doop.
Gee. I know.
He'll be our first ever scoop guest, won't he?
I think he might be.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But also, while we're talking about AI, the Fin Review have popped out an article that is basically businesses will be handed a major say on the future of AI in Australia, with the government planning to revamp the expert group, helping to set the direction of regulation on pivotal technology, which is a really good thing, because we did a podcast recently with Aaron Violi, and they were showing that this group that is advising the government is basically all academics.
Yeah.
And we need business leaders in here. So there's going to be two versions of regulation for high-risk AI being considered, being the scenes, according to sources familiar with the matter, a stringent European Union-style AI law or legislation relaying on broad principles. Sorry, can't speak too well today. Whichever approach the government ultimately opts in for, it'll shape how Australian businesses approach the technology. And I think it's really, really important.
Yeah, I think it's important too, but I'm just worried that they're going to close the gate after the horse has bolted, because people are using it, people are bringing it in. If they start bringing laws and rules in around it later, they're going to have to claw people back.
And that's really hard to do.
Difficult.
But Australian businesses are quite smart in the fact that they're really going forward in, look, without regulation, we self-regulate and we adopt the EU laws.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much the same with the GDPR.
Yeah, that's
so it. And it's going to be essential to have those rules in place if you wish to do business in the union.
Exactly right. What else have you got next? Because I think you've got more articles than I have this week.
Well, I do always say, because just after the scoop last week, the unemployment rates did pop out as well. So it has increased by 0.1% from 3.7 to 3.8% from the previous month.
That's not cause for alarm.
No.
Hey, my next one is from News Corp, our friends over there at News Corp. This is job sharing and on steroids. Bronwyn Bock and Lucy Bradlow on the weekend launched their campaign to be Australia's first political job share independent candidates in the Melbourne federal seat of Higgins for the next election. So they're looking to work one day on, one day off and swapsies with a handover at the end of each week. There'd be one email address, one vote in parliament, and all wages and entitlements would be split. It's a pretty out there idea and one that constitutional lawyers aren't sure is going to work. The idea put forward by the two childhood friends to be job sharing member of parliament wouldn't work without a constitutional amendment, according to constitutional law expert Anne Toomey. She said the constitution couldn't be much clearer than only one member shall be elected for each electoral division. If you want to choose two job sharing members, you'd have to amend the Electoral Act. But it raises the point that job sharing is going to remain firmly on the agenda, and there's a lot of it out there. What are your thoughts on that, Jericho?
I don't think this will work. Like, obviously, there's a lot of changes that are going to be required for this to actually happen at a federal level. But what happens if their opinions differ on a particular matter? How the fuck are they going to vote that? You can't say, oh, we got 237 and a half votes.
Do you reckon they were, like Higgins, which is a pretty upmarket sort of seat, do you reckon they were out there on the red wines and saying, well, we could do this?
At mummy daycare at the park with coffee cups full of booze.
So it's an interesting thought. And the reason I bring it to the table today is because, job sharing is gaining momentum across a lot of areas. And both of us who do work within recruitment do get requests about job sharing. I do quite often.
There's job sharing and then there's this.
Yeah, it's pretty different, isn't it?
It's not. You have an act of parliament for this to fucking happen.
Imagine if the PM wanted to job share.
Oh, my gosh.
It might be better.
No. Look, I think that this is just taking the piss, really.
Taking the piss.
Absolutely taking the piss. Anyway, so look, I'm going to come with some good news. We're constantly hearing about redundancies, and I'm trying not to talk about them too much.
Yep.
Because they're coming under the guise of corporate restructures. But in South America, an Argentinian company called Mercado Libre are about to hire 18,000 people coming from HRD. So they're in
Pick bananas?
No, they're an e-commerce firm.
Wow.
And in Latin America, and they're seeking to expand their presence in the region. So they're looking to hire 18,000 this year alone to bring its total headcount to around 76,000 people, not counting temporary and outsourced workers. Now, this is according to Reuters. Now, the firm plans to hire about 8,200 in Mexico to boost that headcount to nearly 25,000 and plans to hire another 6,500 in Brazil and Argentina and across the board in other South American countries.
Wow.
So isn't that a really nice good news story?
It is good news story. And anybody looking to do a working holiday in South America over the next year should jump on their website.
Colombia!
Oh, brilliant. Okay, I've got one from The Conversation, and the headline is Just a Mum, Pregnant Women and Working Parents Feel Overlooked and Undervalued in the Workplace. So pregnant women and workers with children are often unfairly treated by their bosses and colleagues, despite laws to protect against workplace discrimination, according to a new study by the University of South Australia. More than 1,200 pregnant and parent workers responded to the survey, and despite being an intentionally gender-inclusive study, almost 95% of the respondents identified as female, which would make sense since we're talking about pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I mean, for God's sake. Anyway.
Yeah, all those pregnant men out there.
Yeah, just some high-level data from it. 89% of the respondents endured discrimination while pregnant, 84.7% faced discrimination during parental leave, and 91.8% of respondents experienced discrimination during their return to work. And of them, 25%, so one quarter of respondents felt the need to hide their pregnant belly just to avoid judgment or discrimination. I hide my belly to so that you don't go off at me too, Lauren.
You're not pregnant. You're just fat.
But we need to get better at this. And we did have a really good chat with Sarah Purchase on this topic on Tarpod a couple of months ago.
I know. And it is a really important topic too. And I think some of this discrimination, people just don't realise the stress of having a child or a newborn.
Can I rub your
and
belly?
Sleepless nights. Oh, and you don't touch a pregnant woman's belly. It's not there as public property to play with.
That's why a quarter of people are trying to hide it.
Oh,
don't
my
touch my belly.
God. All right. Now, this one was a fun one I was reading in the Fin Review with our people over at Fair Work.
Fun and fair work don't necessarily go together.
Oh, this was interesting. This is talking about our work from home. This is a bit of a employees who refuse to work from home jobs get a cut in their redundancy payout according to the – and this is coming from the Fin Review. So Bartercard this month got Fair Work Commission orders to reduce the payouts for five long-serving business development managers who had argued that permanently working from home was unsuitable due to the lack of separate working space, the effect on mental health and the cost of setting up a workspace. The Commission's ruling is the first test of whether an employee working their job from home is acceptable alternative employment that fulfills an employer's redeployment obligations during redundancy.
A lot of words employment in that paragraph, wasn't there?
There was.
Employment, so, employment, the, employer,
in the article,
redeployment.
Well, I know, confusing really, say that quick with a Scottish accent. But it was one of those things too, like someone said, I've got a two-bedroom apartment, I've got nothing, I work off the kitchen bench and things like that. And they weren't offered any money either,
right,
to set up a work from home office area. And I come on to two different aspects of this.
Mm-hmm. And what are they?
Well, they didn't offer either. We'll pay for a workspace for you. They just decided to shut offices to cut money. And
work from bed.
I don't think if you don't want to work from home, you shouldn't have to.
No, they're probably should, but particularly when you first joined a business, if there was that option, if you're going into a job with the knowledge of it's a full work from home, then the onus is on you as a candidate if you're going through that process. But if you're already working there and they've changed the rules, then they need to be able to provide and supply somewhere where you can work.
Yeah, support.
Mm.
And really, at the $350 or $550 a month for a seat in a co-working space for those employees, is that really going to fucking hurt you?
Yeah, not much, is it?
No.
And they'll be more efficient and more productive.
It's interesting because here we've got a company trying to force everyone to work from home, yet we've got, on the other hand, so many companies forcing people back into the office.
Mm.
It is a fun times out there.
Events, Lauren, events this week.
Oh, my gosh. Is there anything like last week? Seriously, we were just like an event platform last week.
I know, crazy. I've got two here. The Melbourne Talent Meetup on the 23rd of May, equipping yourself for the AI world. Now, as well as the name change, the team have changed the way they ticket. So it's now via Humantix. So jump on the Melbourne Talent Meetup LinkedIn page for more details.
Yeah, Bonnie and I will be at that one.
Woo! And the second one I've got, which is on the same date in Sydney, and I think I'm going to be at this one, is the Global Talent Management and Mobilisation, A New Era of Workforce Strategy. It's an event by Talent Partners and Expert 360. If you have a contingent workforce or planning one, this one's for you. Check out Chris, that's Chris with a K, Cleland on LinkedIn for more details.
And I have got.
What have you got?
I need a drum roll for this, please. Come on, give it to me, baby. For the first time in its 18-year history, the ATC is coming to Melbourne.
It's come of age, hasn't it? 18, come of age, come to Melbourne. Woo!
Absolutely. So it's taking place on the 14th and 15th of October at Fed Square, a completely iconic venue there at Fed Square.
I'm still going to get a hotel room for the night, I think. I'm not going to go home and then come all the way back.
Yeah, but
you
do live in the middle of nowhere.
I do, but I also will. It's hard to get home at 5 in the morning.
Okay, you're on my couch, buddy. You're on my couch. So get your tickets, guys. Head to the ATC website for this one. And I can't wait. It's going to be fabulous in our hometown.
Yes, it's going to be brill. I can't wait.
The next one I've got is the Crew Talent Advisory. Our friend Simon McSorley is holding a talent leaders lunch.
Ooh.
on the 22nd of May from 12 to 2 at the REA Group headquarters in Richmond here in Melbourne. Ooh. So if you're keen to get along to that one, I would definitely be heading over to Simon's page and the crew page on LinkedIn.
Because there'll be limited availability there, so you better get on it very quickly.
Now, you and I are going to go to that one. We want to catch up with a few people. We want to hear what our talent leaders are saying out there in the industry. So get along to that, everyone. I think that this will be really good. Simon does hold a great event,
yes, he does.
And it's really some incredible conversations have come out of some of his events, really have. I think that is me for the week.
And me. But next week could be even bigger than this one.
Well, next week, everybody, oh, no. I will be doing the scoop from Bali.
You lucky cow.
I know. Moo, moo, moo.
It's going to be bloody, here in Melbourne, it's probably going to be 13 degrees and freezing.
We'll be poolside in my swimmers.
Gee, lucky it's audio.
I know. lucky. I'll send you a selfie.
Yeah, and on that note, it's a goodbye from me.
And a goodbye from me.